Hello, David Savage, all the way over from New York. We've had you on previously on my podcast, and you're back now because you're in Melbourne, and we did a show under my new company, Soam Unlimited, at Willow Urban Retreat, and you took some fucking readings.
Yo, yo. It's all true.
Thank you for joining me again. We've been catching up, and it's so good to see you again. We're saying before how it's such a cool way we met. It is Venetian mansion in Venice, not like Venetian Rome or Italy or whatever.
Venice, California.
Doing readings, and one thing led to another. Now you're over here doing shows in Australia.
I feel like at this point everyone's going, huh? What? How do these guys know each other? No, you don't think so?
Maybe.
So, my friend Jeremy here came to an event I did in Los Angeles, California about 6 months ago, where I did readings, intuitive readings in front of an audience, which is my own brand of performance art, and saw that show and threw out the idea that maybe I'd come to Melbourne. And then I just so happened to have a cousin who's getting married in Melbourne right about now. And then Jeremy put together an event with me just the other day that was beautiful.
Mm. Love your... So you're a smart motherfucker. We were at lunch the other day and you were talking about how you see the future, and I really liked it. Mm. I also really like how you got this capability to... How nonchalant you are about some capabilities that we have as human beings. Like, some people can do math really well, some people can do math terrible, some people can do creative stuff really well, some do it terrible, some people can read other people's emotions really well, some do it terrible. You're in that category of doing it terribly. No, of doing it incredibly, incredibly well, to the point of awe and to the point of holy fuck, because you read people with your eyes shut. This is Brett walking in, by the way, my brother-in-law, just walking in the background.
Make yourself brother-in-law comfy.
Beer's there.
Welcome to the party.
Go on the balcony or hang out here, whatever you want. And you do it to the... obviously, I like the fact that you do it as a performing art because it makes it entertainment, really. And at the same time, it's helpful for someone that's getting read to have a mirror of their inner reality, right?
I think so. I think the thing that I'm doing for the people that I'm reading is I'm allowing them to be seen. And that in itself can be really healing, even transformative.
And do you think the fact that they're being seen in front of an audience and the way you're describing it and expressing the emotion is... Like, when you perform, you exaggerate the emotion that you're feeling, or do you just represent the emotion that you're feeling when you move your body?
I want to answer both. So I'm allowing their feelings into my body and then expressing those feelings fully. So I'm an empath, and by that I mean I'm able to feel what other people are feeling, as can many others. And if anyone listening has ever had the experience, say, of sitting on an airplane and feeling suddenly nervous and then discovering that the person sitting next to you was the one feeling nervous, and that somehow you had felt their nervousness in your own body, that's what I mean by being an empath. So I'm just allowing that feeling into my body and then giving my body license to express it physically and fully.
Wow. It's awesome, man.
Thanks.
I love it. We could talk about it forever, but we want to talk about future stuff because that's
okay. I want to talk about future stuff too.
So the reason I like your outlook on the future is because it was very positive, and it's in line with what I deem our spiritual evolution, or the evolution of our mental capabilities, spiritual capabilities. How would you describe it, and what do you see in your ball? You're hopeful. That's what I liked.
I guess I was in a good mood.
Uh-oh.
No, I go back and forth between hopeful and hopeless and frustrated and excited. So I guess that's just whatever I'm feeling then gets projected onto my vision of the future. I think that probably is true of most people, right? Like, if you're feeling really hopeful in your life, then suddenly the future of humanity looks really positive. And if you're despairing in your life, the future of humanity looks really negative. There might be some people who harbor the illusion that they can objectively assess the probability of humanity surviving and then match their emotion to meet that assessment. But I would argue that those people are delusional and that it's still a kind of projection that's going on, whether or not they know it. All that said, I do have an emergent sense of, if not what the future is going to look like, what this transition to the future is going to look like, and what some of the principles are that we will be finding ourselves living by such that we can all thrive together.
Mm. So that's the trajectory of humanity, is this kind of unification and healing.
That is the trajectory of humanity. That's not to say I believe that's coming to pass, but I'm hoping it will, but the edge of positivity, the edge of growth, the edge of human evolution is pointing to a depth of universal interconnection and shared community responsibility across the whole world that we've never seen before or even imagined possible.
Hmm.
Or to quote a writer that I really admire who talks brilliantly about the future named Charles Eisenstein, who himself is quoting the great Buddhist Thich Nhat Hanh, we're entering an age of interbeing where the dominant paradigm shifts from one of the individual to the collective, and we just step into an understanding that each one of us has our role to play in the collective dance, and that we are each best served as individuals to the degree that we are each serving this larger community.
Right, so it's that would have to roll onto nature as well then, because if we got this interdependency of one another, we would obviously be looking at the interdependency we have on our environment for giving us life as well, right?
I'm sorry, I didn't follow that. You were mumbling a little bit. Are you okay?
I'm okay. My brain just stopped working for a moment.
No. Do you need a beat? Do you want me to carry it? Should I ask you questions?
No.
What do you think about the likelihood of humanity to reach its next state of evolution before we run ourselves off the cliff of the ecological catastrophe we seem to be facing?
Yeah, I mean, I see there's one of two ways. It's either going to hit a real point of boiling and extremity for change to occur and a lot of damage to come from that, or we're going to steer the ship early enough, which I feel like there is a big shift at the moment of people being more aware of the impact and that they have and the responsibility that they have, at least in Western world, to look after one another and to look after themselves and to just live better and more out from loving places. Some people, like with environmental stuff, say it's too late. You know, even if we set a new course now, it's still not fast enough. So I don't really know. I don't have enough data on it. But I feel like it's one of those two things, and it's probably likely going to be this first, that it's going to hit a point of something, some kind of catastrophe. Because that's what happens in nature. That's what happens in me. I only make significant change in myself, even recently. Like I was behaving from a lot of dysfunction up until late last year, and it was my panic attack or my anxiety attack that the purge of that emotion and release of that stress from my anatomy created a change that I can't go back from now because it shifted. But I, hand on heart, wouldn't have changed unless that had happened. I couldn't imagine that I would have. So is that just the way nature is designed to make change? It has to hit extremity?
Huh. No. I don't believe so. I believe nature doesn't have to hit extremity to make change. Nature can shift imperceptibly toward its own survival without needing catastrophe to awaken it. But
We can do both.
Yeah, I can do both. And I think that there's a level of awareness that more and more people are reaching where they're in tune with things on a deep enough level that they can act before catastrophe strikes, having deeply internalized its otherwise inevitability. Like, well, it's just coming, and so I act before it comes. I don't need to be hit in the face with it. It's also known as instinct or intuition. I'm driving the car. I don't know why, but something tells me to put on my brakes. I put on my brakes, and then, oh, now I realize that something was about to cross the road that I didn't even see. So I think we're nearly there. My own relationship, for instance, to the stupidity and pointlessness and brutality of our existing political structures has been changing, where I used to feel really frustrated by it and despairing of it, and I seem to just be withdrawing from it and living into a new kind of way of being and watching more people be a part of that new way of being, knowing that it's deeper to the truth. I think that's reflective of the larger shift we're going to see away from fixed hierarchy and rule-based fraudulence into embodied truthfulness and human interconnection and synchronicity and love being our orientation.
That's awesome. So it's the unplugging from it. Because I remember even on our last episode, you were more heated about political climate.
Yeah. And I'm chiller now.
But it's the disengagement from it. It's the choosing to it's essentially disobeying the propaganda. Like when I look at news now, I can barely last a second. And when I catch it on the TV when I'm at the doctor's, like it's kind of like fear. It's like six headlines: fear, 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 love and puppies. And it's like it's that sequence, and it's just startling how they care to put this person got stabbed, this person got murdered. We're worrying about this. Like, there's so many good things happening in the world. Or at least look for them and celebrate them. But it's absurd to me that they're still operating like that. So our only choice, and like it is absurd to you as well, but our only choice is to disengage from it.
I half agree. I find choice to be a poor, not a useful way of looking at it. So I don't like choice there. I don't think we can choose to disengage through discipline. Like, I hereby choose to stop watching and then make a practice of that. But I think what I'm talking about is deeper than choice. It's a kind of outgrowing, like a natural process. And once you've worked through your own feelings toward the broken political system, the natural next place is to transcend it. You don't have to make any choice. You just have to work with what's emerging in you, honestly.
That's a wicked way to describe it. And then you engage with more enlightened thinking and enlightened communities?
Yeah. Yes. As long as what you're saying takes all the burden of choice off the listener. So I never want to say you need things I never say and also find counterproductive. You need to make better choices with your life. You need to disengage. You need to focus on the positive. You need to, all of these formulations are actually what I believe are not needed. What is needed is an acceptance of where you are and an honest engagement with the underlying dynamics that have led you to be there. And the more you do that, the more you'll find that what you're telling yourself you need to do will emerge all the more easily and organically once you let yourself be where you are.
So you're kind of sinking into what you are.
Yeah, that's me. Yeah. That's what I'm advocating. And then to dovetail on what we were talking about the other day, that evolution of the individual that I'm seeing emerging as a way of being feel like being more clear. I feel like I'm using fancy language.
Yeah, get clear.
I want to get clear. Okay. So, spiritual world. There are two kinds of... There's a division in the spiritual world that goes unspoken about, but can be really noticed if you're in it. Spiritual world number one is all about being spiritual. This is about following what they call love and light. This is about raising your vibration. This is about being your best self every day. This is about shining. To me, this is also about total bullshit. And what it really is about is shaming you for not being shining, not being full of love and light, not being this idealized self. That's spiritual world number one, and there's a lot of that. The best thing I can say about that spiritual world is that there is a truth that people who speak like that are channeling. There is a place where your vibration is raised and you can emanate love and light, but you don't get there by trying. Mm. So then there's spiritual world number two.
So just it sounds quickly a little bit like a lot of religion, focusing on just the good and pushing away all the bad or demonizing it.
Yes, yeah, that sounds right. That's right. It's like to take the extreme version of Catholicism where you make a sin out of that which is not in the service of Christ or something, which just means that you're splitting the person in two and causing all kinds of shame and self-hatred in the best cases, and in the worst cases, you're driving those darker parts into more and more destructive outlets. And that's how you get, one way you get pedophilia scandals.
It's totally ignoring the aspect of what we are and not understanding and not seeking to accept it.
Yeah. Exactly. It's rejecting a part of ourselves. When you reject a part of yourself, that part of yourself doesn't go anywhere. It just curls up in a corner in a ball of shame and then plots subtly how to get its revenge. And then it will wait for when you are weak and it will strike much more strongly than if you had integrated it, forcing you to push that guy into a deeper and darker corner where the revenge will be all the more swift and sudden. So this is a very unhealthy way of operating in the world, though albeit totally understandable and probably the most common, and is also what most quote-unquote spirituality is about.
And to give a specific example about that mechanic quickly, I would say that it's, like for me, in my direct experience with it, it's like when I feel angry about something, allowing myself to just be fucking cross for a moment and shouting.
Amen.
And being in the car, go, fuck, I got a parking ticket. What a fucking cunt. Ah! And just letting it out in a safe environment, ideally.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to really, ideally, you don't want to push that on other people. And then it releases it. But what I have done in the past is like, oh, angry is bad, below it's pain. I intellectualize it. And then I don't allow myself to feel that anger. And that's actually caused me probably a lot of physical pain in different ways. Some doctors have said, because there's anger's linked to certain parts of the body, etc.
I think emotions that we tell ourselves not to feel or push down is the greatest source of human suffering.
100%.
And that leads me to... And by the way, if you are repressing your emotions, welcome to the human family. That's totally normal. Everyone does it, including me. So what I'm definitely not doing is judging people for repressing our emotions. All that means is that it wasn't safe, usually in our family environments, and often just in our culture, to allow those emotions to flow through us. So we push them down. That's totally normal. And in the environment in which you grew up, it might have been the only way to survive. But now as we grow into adulthood, in the real sense of adulthood, in the sense of becoming our potential, we now have an option in spiritual world number two to grow into ourselves fully. And what we're talking about emotions is one aspect of it. It's the aspect of it I know best. It's that instead of making war with different aspects of ourselves, we start embracing the aspects of ourselves that we're able to embrace. So for you, it's anger. It was important for you to go, I'm feeling effing angry, in order for you to unlock that part of yourself and regain kind of wholeness. For me, I had a lot of grief that I didn't recognize in my own system forever, and it was controlling me, this unfelt, unprocessed grief. And in order for me to come into myself, I needed to give myself the space to feel it. And that unlocked so much of my potential. See, as I talk about it, you can feel the tone of my voice shift. It's like there is some grief still left or something, because I can feel some sadness starting to emerge in me, which you can hear. I'm just allowing, I'm being with the sadness. I'm not trying to overcome it and project some other personality who doesn't feel it right now. I'm just in the sadness. And so from here, from this place of allowing different parts of ourself, we start to discover that we're not just our pain, we're also our joy and our bliss, another part of ourself that we might have been hiding. We can call that, if there's the dark shadow, the stuff that we're pushing down, there's what some people call the golden shadow, the beautiful light stuff that we also push away. And we can find the light shadow by going into those areas of our lives that bring us the most amount of joy, or that we find ourselves most drawn to, where magic just seems to unfold on our own, all on its own, where we're in our superpower. So this is real world. This is spirituality in the healthy sense. This is going into what is blocking you from being in your flow, and then exploring what is most calling you. And the more you do those two things, the more you'll find that who you are on the deepest level just starts to emerge all on its own. And that's where things get really exciting. You start to realize, or I have started to realize, no, I think you've started to realize, Jeremy, and many of us have started to realize, that what's emerging through us is not up to us. What's emerging through us is not up to us. It's just what's ours to do. What is our gift? No choices need to be made. We can run from it or we can allow it. And the more we are in tune with ourselves, the more allowing it is what happens. So for instance, I have noticed in myself a remarkable capacity to express things. And there's no decision. I didn't decide to be articulate. I'm not trying to be articulate. It's just mine to do. I was given this capacity to express things well, and now that's just flowing through me. And you have, among many other gifts, an exuberance and an understanding of how to capture people's attention. And with that spoonful of sugar that is your joyfulness and playfulness and sense of humor, to put in that spiritual medicine. That's just my sense of your gift, and you have others too. And I don't think these are choices. And I don't think that if I decided I was going to be the court jester, punk rock, spiritual podcaster, I could pull it off, even if I spent years trying. And I don't think if you spent years trying to be the empathic, articulate, no this just, it's not. So it's like, we were talking about choice in the old paradigm. I choose to be this. But in the new paradigm, we can stop thinking about that. I'm not choosing to be articulate. I'm not choosing to be sensitive to your emotions. Maybe I'm choosing to explore that. And then eventually, when I get proficient at it, it's just my gift and I'm just here doing it. And then it gets really interesting. Should I pause there while you poke away, or just keep flowing?
I love it. I love what you're saying. Like, because that's my conviction in the moment too.
Awesome. So then now we start to leave the individual here, because this, if it's not up to me what gift I have, and at a certain level of awareness or integration, that gift just starts flowing effortlessly through me, then, I start to discover that there are other people in their gifts that correspond with mine. They're not the same, but they're no worse or no better. We're just different players on the soccer field of life. And if my job is to be the articulate explainer of these realms, or that's one of my jobs, / carnival barker for spirituality in my own way, And your
What's
job...
What's a carnival barker?
Carnival barker... Actually, you're more like the carnival barker. The carnival barker is the guy at the carnival who's like, come on in!
Gotcha.
Like...
Yeah, like the
You're actually more the carnival barker. I may be the... I don't know. Like, I'm run out of words on what I am.
Well, no, you're like a representation of what an empath is.
Yes, that's what
so
I am.
So you're the flagship store for humanity for it.
That's good. I like that. So there you have it. So then that's my job right now. It flows, and then you have your job. And then is there any friction in us doing our jobs together? No. Is there any like competition? No. There's just like... Mm. You're doing your thing and I'm doing my thing and I don't want to be doing your thing and you don't want to be doing my thing. It's just like, there's not that, it just flows. And then you start to discover that it's not just two people flowing together. It's three, it's four, it's 50. And we know we're flowing together because it's effortless. It's just what we want to do because it's what wants to be done through us. And then when you get to that place, and I've seen it starting to happen in little pockets where you have enough people working from their gift, what you start to have is emergent projects that become organized through synchronicity, divine flow, not in some abstract way, just in the way that I'm sitting here in Melbourne at an ad agency run by a friend of yours. That's all I'm talking about, like that thing in LA and Melbourne, and like, why am I here? But somehow it feels true. It's the thing to do. It's just the thing that's flowing through us. Bigger projects are going to start to emerge that way, where we're just thinking of like, our job is to listen to who we are and become that. And then you do this, I do this, you do this, you do that. It can all happen so much faster. And then the universe starts going, oh, here's this for you. Here's that for you. Here's this for you. Here's that for you. And you can look at it magically, or you could look at it through the lens of the secret or something, or you could also just look at it as the way nature operates. When you're in the flow of things, you are participating in the dance of life, and all of life wants to support you. When you are fighting the flow of life, then it takes a tremendous amount of force to get stuff to happen. And you could call that capitalism if you want. Like, if you want to achieve something really big in the existing structure, you need lots and lots of money. But if it's just enough people working from their magic, from their superpower, then really big things will be achieved effortlessly and quickly and soon.
It sounds fucking awesome, and it makes total sense, because it seems intelligent. It seems like nature's intelligent way to orchestrate it or organize itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when we look at nature and look at bees organizing themselves, or ants working as a team to organize themselves, they're all, every individual is so content in their pocket. Mm-hmm. You know, and the more I step into what I've always had this conviction, particularly recently, of like, I got to drop myself into my pocket, put myself in my own pocket. And that, all that means is like, be my truest self. Be my realist self, be closest to the source of what I am, and just allow that to bubble through me, allow it to express through me. And that's where I feel liberated, that's where I feel free, that's where I feel like I don't really care what anyone thinks. You just feel like you're, and that's what I feel like with Soma Unlimited, this, what put on our event and is doing the media stuff, it feels like it's nature's desire, not mine. And that's what, and I finally got out the way of that, because I, trying to bring it into life, got entangled a lot in my ego and my sense of identity of it being me. And it kind of just, it retarded it. It didn't allow it to grow or flourish or come into being properly. It was only when I stepped out of it, its way, and became a mechanic on the rocket ship that it wanted to be, instead of thinking I was the rocket ship.
Mm-hmm.
And then just running around, making sure the panels are whacked on, and then all this abundance comes towards it. Like, people want to work with it because you're allowing. It really feels beautifully like you're allowing it to bend. Allowing nature to do what it wants to do through you. You're
That's
a
it.
Conduit for it.
And then what if there's 1,000 people like that, or 100,000 people like that, or 1,000,000 people like that?
It will organize itself so clever.
So clever. and like, who isn't going to want to join the party? Eventually, that's the whole party. You will either be in your flow, or you will be the gift to somebody. Because if you are not in your flow, as many humans aren't, most, then what you have to offer first of all, you have much to offer if you're all constricted and confused, because aspects of your flow come through anyway. But what you also have to offer is the gift of healing yourself and presenting yourself to people who are in their flow and can help you. So imagine a world, this is my dream world, imagine a world where there's a friend of mine named Adam Growald, and he and I had this idea together of the Alignment Bureau. And the Alignment Bureau simply finances people who are in their truth or in their flow or in alignment. So you walk into the Alignment Bureau and then, oh, it doesn't matter what you want to do. If you're in your truth, that is the thing to do for you. Thus, we at the Alignment Bureau with infinite money give you whatever you need so that you have to do it. You don't have to fight your flow to survive in this world.
Yeah.
That wants to happen. And then let's say you're not in alignment. You show up to the Alignment Bureau and you're like, I really want to do X, but you're all angry and confused and bent out of shape and you're not really going to achieve X from the place you're coming from. The Alignment Bureau gets to say in this kind of fantasy sci-fi world I'm creating here, the Alignment Bureau gets to say, you're out of alignment. You get to go to the people who will help you find alignment, who are in their alignment to help you. And so you become part of the dance and the flow. And that becomes the whole game. It's like, if you're aligned, you go. And then when you need to break to take a break, you break. And then if you're not in alignment, you find the people who will align you. And then you align. And then the money to finance this whole operation just flows into what is in alignment until the whole damn thing just works.
Mm.
Right? It seems like it's actually that freaking simple.
It's amazing.
And then we just start channeling what wants to come through us from these, now I get a little woo-woo, but from these other dimensions that are like knocking on the door going, when do enough of you humans get together to start making the magic of which you're collectively capable?
Mate.
Very soon.
Mate, I love it. Very soon.
Very soon.
I fucking hope so.
Yeah, you can feel them circling here, even in these lamps. Like, they love it when you talk like this. You're like, yeah, that's, you can feel like the air shift.
Well, you can. I can't.
You might be able to.
Do you, when you see these energies, are you visually seeing them or are you sensing them, like, invisibly?
I've seen them before. I'm finding a bit of self-consciousness leaving the domain of the perfectly rational, albeit a little bit spiritually inspired, and entering the domain of the supernatural, even though in my understanding of the cosmos, there's no real line, but I'm so sensitive to the way people hear things that I know that there is one for many people. So I'm just going to jump over that divider and say that there are portals that are wanting to be opened, and there are intelligent beings alive and not alive in the way that we think that are waiting to give us information about how to assemble new and beautiful spiritual technologies.
Wow, that's dope. And really, another way you could translate is that it's like when you talk about the spiritual realms of other dimensions, it's kind of like there's so much invisibleness or things that our senses can't perceive. So we know that scientifically. So we're just kind of just say, look there. All that stuff is probably there. They could be infrared beings or I don't know.
Yeah. You know? I can feel them now. I've seen this row of beings, not just a row, like billions, a line, like a festival of billions of beings, but kind of like the way you're waiting to get into Burning Man or something. They're all just waiting to come here. They're waiting for enough of us to just start listening. And we put enough of us together and we're like, all right, what wants to happen through us? Some of what wants to happen will be ancient wisdom running through our system, like billions of years of evolution that wants to come through from this earth. And some of what will want to come through will be wisdom that is beyond our universe, or not maybe our universe, but I meant our world, that also wants to come through us. So that we can ascend.
Ascend to what?
That's a good question. Ascend.
Expand.
In the near term, to a place where we're welcoming everyone here on planet Earth for who they really are. That's at least one step. So when you come out of your mother's womb, unless you were raised by uniquely loving, capable, caring, and wonderful parents, your first lesson on earth, if you're a man, first of all, for many of us, is that something with your penis is off and that must be cut off. That's your first lesson as a man, oftentimes. But that's a subset of the larger lesson you keep learning, which is that something's deeply wrong with you. And that you're taught this from when somebody first screams at you for being too loud, to when you show up in kindergarten and they say you have to stop playing now, to when you dedicate your entire childhood to figuring out what the people in authority want and giving it to them. And then eventually people graduate from college completely clueless, lost, frustrated, wondering why they can't achieve their dreams off the bat when they have no idea who they even are, because society's done such a great job of teaching them who they're not. So the first step would just be to stop this mass abuse of children and start embracing people, babies, children, for who they are. Can we at least get there on this human journey? And then once we get there, once we're like, oh, David from age one, wow, look, he's got this capacity to feel what other people are feeling. That's amazing. Let's honor that instead of what's wrong with this highly sensitive boy. Come on, like, get it together, toughen up. So once we start honoring people for who they are, then we can start co-creating in that magical way immediately, collectively. And then what happens from there? Like phase two, if phase one is just acknowledging people for who they really are, phase two is dancing together. And like, I can just feel this, like, imagine an awareness where I'm here on this podcast and something flows through my system that deeply moves somebody who's listening in China, and then something flows through their system that creates music, and then their system, and except that instead of it happening unconsciously, we're so wired up with each other that we can feel the dance happening together.
Wow.
And then what happens from there, I don't know.
I mean,
but at the very least, I'll just finish this one last thought. At the very least, what we're talking about is the
it's harmonized
total embrace of human capacity and love as our founding civilizational principle. I mean, and with that, the full acknowledgement that we are at one with the animals and the plants, and we respect and love their potential, that there's no separateness, and that the illusion of separateness is not just something we talk about but don't believe in, but it's actually just a complete, we don't even see it anymore. We're like, oh, I am that tree, I am that plant. What are we here to do together? Oh, feels nice, doesn't it?
It sounds amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's euphoric. It's like, when you speak of ascension, for me, it's an expanding of consciousness capability, expanding of your capability as a Homo sapien, and to more sophisticated behaviors. Like it's a very sophisticated operating system that you're talking about. And it makes total sense in nature when you see resonance. Mm. Resonance is this natural thing that wants to occur. So therefore, like, that's what you're saying wants to occur with humanity is resonance.
I like that. Resonance. Yeah.
Yeah.
Feels good.
And what's fascinating about where we're at currently is that the interconnectedness of, you know, like through the internet and communication technology, how our, you know, our higher, more expanded awareness state can flow through that. Like you said, for the China example, like it happens with this podcast. People around the world listen to it, something that you're saying, and at a different point in time and get affected by it, and it transforms their reality in one little way or another because it unlocks their thinking in one little way or another. And so that's part of, or even you and I, that's a part of like the resonance. Like nature's created that, this event that we did in Melbourne. And that was literally by you and I falling into our pockets and serving nature or serving.
Totally.
And that dance happened between two individuals. And like you said, that will multiply to 10 individuals in different ways. Or like our next event might be four other people, or who knows, you know. But I love your outlook on it, because it fills me with so much joy and hope. Because that's my hope, is that my sense is that we could be living so much better than we are as a people. Like we could be loving each other so much better than we are. We could be having mm-hmm. such a better reality than we have. And when you describe it so clearly and articulately and concisely, it just fills me with like, yes!
Right? Let's do this thing.
Yes!
Yeah.
But not only yes, I can see how it will happen. Because the way in which you describe it, you're describing things that are already happening.
Yeah, they're already happening. There's another thing that to make it happen, though, that I want to share. I did this event in Los Angeles with a friend of mine named Sydney Campos, who's a fellow empath, wrote a book called The Empath Experience. And as two professional or semi-professional empaths, we gathered a bunch of other empaths on a roof for an event called Empaths Unite. And something came over me and I decided I wanted to try to open a portal. So, you know, those beings that I see waiting, my suspicion is that people who are more sensitive than others are more likely to feel them or see them or hear them. And so I asked the people on the roof to just become present, Sydney and I did, to just become present to what was happening. And somebody would feel a buzzing in their ear and somebody else would feel like this pressure. And then somebody else would hear a noise and then somebody else would look over there. Wow. And slowly but surely, our collective attention started to move skyward. And several of us, I would say at least five or six of us, started to feel the presence of these beings or of a being that had something to tell us. And as that was happening, two other things started happening. One, a woman who was part of our group started to cry. Cry not about this interdimensional portal that was being opened and the beauty thereof, but about a relationship she was having that was hurting her. And then something else started happening, which was a man started to have a bit of a panic attack. And he was freaking out because he didn't understand what was going on and it was causing him a lot of anxiety. And at first I was frustrated by this. Like, wow, we're doing something amazing and I've got like, you know, a woman crying about her boyfriend and I've got this guy freaking out. And then I realized, oh, this is what is needed to hold space for in order for us to ascend. So if you look at it even metaphorically, and of course pain goes beyond this, but women need to be held in their pain in order for us to collectively open the portal. And men need to be held in their anxiety when they feel like they're losing control. And until we hold men in their anxiety at their lack of loss of control in this new paradigm that we're talking about, and until we hold women in their pain for what they've endured at the hands of men controlling them, we're not going to be able to open that portal.
Wow. Wow.
And
what a sign.
Right? It's right there. And so my first instinct is to problematize it. And then my second wiser instinct is to hold it and be like, okay, let's assemble and of course, these are not the only things that need to happen. These are not the only pains that exist. There are men who are deeply sad and women who are terribly controlling, obviously. But what's needed is not just to aspire to this higher level of consciousness. What's needed is to hold and embrace people at their current level of suffering. Just like we want to do for, just like I'm able to do with myself, just like I'm able to sit with my grief, can I sit with this woman's pain? And and I think with men, what we're talking about here in this ascension, men need to surrender control. We need to take our hands off the steering wheel. Almost completely. So we're talking about allowing, and allowing is a feminine quality. And the masculine quality of controlling or figuring stuff out or going toward a goal is subservient to the feminine quality of allowing what wants to move through us. Mm. So we're talking about moving from a masculine-oriented culture to a feminine-oriented culture, which is going to cause a whole ton of anxiety for men, especially men in positions of power. Mm. And when they start having their panic attacks, or as they start having their panic attacks, we need to make it safe for them to flip out.
Mm. I mean, you can describe this, what you're describing here, sorry, is exactly what I feel like I've been going through on my personal journey. is like holding space for myself, allowing myself to feel what I need to feel. And same as the way you describe your emotional process as well. And then with this business is surrendering control as well. Like realizing that I'm serving it rather than it's mine and I'm controlling it, and all this kind of very masculine thing that obviously comes to the forefront when, because that's my cultural resonance.
Yeah.
You know, the current state of consciousness of a lot of businesses and organizations is that. So of course it's going to be empathetically. I'm going to be absorbing it.
Yeah. It's the paradigm shift of the moment. Maybe that's just because it's the one I'm most passionate about, or maybe it's because I'm just really in tune with what's happening, is this, this shift from what I want to make happen to what wants to happen through me. And as that shift happens, what you want to make happen will no longer be possible, because something greater than what you want to make happen is what will be happening. And so that's going to cause a lot of anxiety and a lot of, as we talk about this shift from that masculine oriented place, that feminine oriented place, there are a lot of people who want to make themselves feel better by saying it's about coming into balance. We need to find the balance between the masculine and the feminine, but that's actually not true. As far as I see it, we're, as the feminine energy leads, as the emergent truth that wants to move through our bodies becomes our teacher, then and only then does the masculine get to show up in support. And that's the balance.
Oh, that's nice. So can we draw that back to a specific example so it helps cement it and explain it better?
A woman is having a baby, and the unhealthy man says, it's 6 p.m. The baby is due at 5:58. You're 2 minutes late. Push harder, faster now. What the hell is wrong with you? That sounds like an absurdity, right? But actually, that's what almost every business runs by, right? It's like, what's the goal? Let's do whatever we need to do in order to meet that goal. So that's the unhealthy masculine showing up to a scene in which we intuitively understand the feminine energy of what wants to emerge through this woman literally is what is in the lead. What is in the service of this woman and the baby that wants to emerge from her is the only relevant question on earth while a woman is having a baby. So what does the healthy man do? He carefully, assuming he knows what he's doing, he carefully observes what is true of this woman's body and this baby at this moment. He provides calm and patient support for her psychology. He provides an outlet for whatever she needs. And then he guides the process based on his intuitive understanding of it. And then if something is coming into the space that is not in service to that process, he's very strict about it. So when a crazy person walks into the room who doesn't belong,
he knocks her out.
He says, with all of his force, you get out of this room, because he's in service. So that would be the healthy masculine.
Beautiful. It's so cool. It's funny, something like that challenges the ego, or, you know, our current ego, egotic state, so much, because it's like, no, it's about me, and it's hyper individualism kind of culture. But when you describe that situation, that just sings to my heart, and I imagine everyone else's, is like, that's powerful, natural, beautiful, and divine like. Or
and when we have those moments of deep transition, like birth, death, imagine the first time you have sex, or getting married, or you know, any kind of intense journey that you're going to go on, life change. We know we want people there who are both in tune with what's happening and able to guide us clearly. We know we need that. And then, but then when we go into the day-to-day world, we pretend that like we can dictate all the terms, and then we want a bunch of robots who can help us execute on what we think we want. And then suddenly that deeper need for like guidance and allowance gets pushed to the side. So in it, for instance, like if you're freaking out about something, you often will find yourself coming to me. If you want to take a massive dose of a psychedelic, I'm the kind of person you would very much trust having at your side. But then same person shows up to a job and a resume where they pay really well, and I become this like, who are you? What's going on? I don't get you. So it's this weird tension where like the deepest things we value in the real, in our heart space, become the things we dismiss as trivial in the professional, political, economic spaces.
It's like we need a wise council of varied gurus, for want of a better word, advising people, advising governments.
Yeah, or another way of doing it is we just need women to do whatever they need to do to get clear on what they actually feel and then express that, and then we'll pretty much be there.
But men will probably be jumping in the way of that, though, won't they?
Well, yeah, I mean, they will be jumping in the way, but like the... there was this thing that I read somewhere that if my friend Joy was telling me about, that if women were able to connect with their true desires, and so much in society is trying to block women from connecting with their desires or shame them for their desires, if women were able to own what they truly want, then everything would start to heal immediately.
Wow.
Like, 'cause what do women really, really want? They don't, very few of them really deeply want power. Very few of them really deeply want control. What women really want, like really, community, connection, flow, harmony, like healthy families, you know, so if they could own that, intimacy, you know, if they could really own that, then we'd all be fine. But that's why we go to such great lengths to try to disconnect them from what they want.
Fuck me. Because I've been having this conviction for a couple of years now that it's the age of the women. Like, women, it will be the thing that heals the world. Like, we need to listen to women.
Yeah.
And hearing you say that then made it all sound like it makes so much sense.
Yeah. I would just asterisk that by saying we need to listen to embodied women.
Yes.
Because disembodied women are more off-center than disembodied men. But women who are talking from fear of their own flow, from that desire to control, can be more
chaotic, I guess, because the feminine is the chaos.
No, they're not more chaotic. They're actually more disconnected. Hillary Clinton would be a good example of a woman that I find to be deeply disconnected from herself, and brings everybody into this confusing place where she's making a half-hearted show of her femininity to buy credibility, but is in fact completely controlled in her expression and actually separates us from our own deepest self. So it's, yeah. So we want embodied women who are in touch with what they're feeling truly. Mm-hmm. Like, do you look at Hillary Clinton and go, that's a woman who knows what she's feeling? No.
And you know the women in your life that are like that.
Yeah.
Like, you can list them and you see them and you adore them.
Yeah.
Like, I said to one the other day, 2 days ago, I was like, I literally said to her, like, I adore you. I love you to bits. You felt like a sister. I want to do whatever I can to support you, because I just, what you're doing, I just honor and want and love so much. And that, it's funny that you describe that situation between the masculine and feminine, because that's exactly what I felt like I played out with her, which felt like a real reverence, a reverence for something that I could never be. And like the same, that I have a reverence for you and something that I could never be. And it's kind of this beautiful, it's almost like God looking at itself or at different aspects of itself, you know, that we see in one another. And that's what's almost so funny about the Christian doctrine, is that it's sad how much they got this yearning for this love, and they're missing it around them, you know, like,
well, they hate them. I mean, the Christian, the dogma, not the doctrine, like the gospel can be quite beautiful, but the dogma is like, let's universally love everyone through Christ and hate ourselves. Like, yeah, this is a sin. That's bad.
Hate, we mean not accept yourself.
Yeah. That's what I mean.
It's funny. It's one close to home for me because I grew up like extreme fundamentalist Christian. So when I look back at that now with the perspective, it's just like, it's what are you like? And intuitively, my conviction was, I want to love anyone and everyone. I want to explore more what I am. I want to see. And if it turns out, I found out that God or love is way more vast than I ever thought it was, because I was narrowed down to this narrow spectrum of what it was that was so convincing, because it's just the narrative's just echo chambered to you. Mm. Like again, every Wednesday, every Sunday, every day, this is your reality. And then when you leave it, you look back and go, guys, it's so much bigger. The thing that you're talking about, specifically the word God, love, all these things, it's actually all the way out here too. And it's all of it.
Mm.
And
that's beautiful.
It's hard going back. It's like the hero's journey. You go back and you go, what I felt like I did, went into the jungle, into the cave, I feared to enter, and how the treasure I seek, come out, tell my tribe. And they were like, no, you're mad. So you go back to your tribe, like in Joseph Campbell thing, and you go, guys, I found some gold. I went out. It fucking cost me everything. I nearly wanted to die. Mm-hmm. I came back. Here's the treasure. And they're like, poof, we don't understand it. Fuck off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again and again and again. And your family, who you feel like you want them to love you and accept you, all of you, you give them this stuff and it's like, no, mate, no. And then that's an evolution itself. And then some people will say, of my own consciousness, to go, okay, that's okay then. You know, that's, I accept, heal my own pain furthermore, and then find your own tribal, like this kind of, like you feel like family. Yeah, that woman I was speaking about feels like my fucking spirit family.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's my new tribe. So they're the people we end up sharing. Mm-hmm. Our gold with, right?
Amen. And then we stitch it together, because you got a piece of it, I got a piece of it, this girl you're talking about's got a piece of it, and before we know it, it's just one thing.
Mm.
That's the other thing that's happening that we were talking about the other day. It's this there's these hubs of consciousness, we could call it spirituality, emergent interest in higher levels of awareness that I'm feeling here in Melbourne, and I feel in New York and San Francisco and LA, and I'm sure in almost every other major city in the world, and all these towns, and each of these towns or cities have their little community of people who are genuinely seeking growth and connection and transformation, genuinely seeking it. And what we're finding is that those communities are starting to overlap. Like, we saw each other in LA, and then we ran into each other on a rooftop in New York City without planning at all.
4 weeks later or something.
Right?
It was crazy.
It was wild. So there you are on a rooftop in New York City. So that's just like this cross-pollination of these different consciousness communities. And what we don't realize, or maybe some of us realize, or I'm starting to realize, is that they're starting to cohere. And what they want to become, I believe, is a community, an interconnected web of conscious communities. And the reason we want to become that, first of all, it's because consciousness is unified, so conscious communities are going to organically want to unify. But what I'm excited to eventually build is an onboarding platform for the rest of the world to come join this increasingly unified community. Right now, we're just popping our head out, these different communities, saying, hey, I'm here in Melbourne, and I'm here in LA, and I'm here in New York, and oh, we're finding each other. How many friends do you have on Facebook? And that's really cool. And then in a few years, it's just one, starts to be one thing. And then coincident with that, or simultaneously to that, I'm imagining the emergence of a brand or a platform or the name of a movement, so that we can invite the rest of the world to join us in this transformation.
Mm.
So like, here we are, all of these communities knitted together, representing this unified consciousness. And we know it's a unified consciousness because it's happening through us. We didn't decide to make this thing self-made. And we know that this language is esoteric, and we know that this is weird for a lot of people, and we know that this is scary. And that's why we've created all of these places and spaces, digital and real, where you can come and join this movement. And the reason you're going to come and join this movement is because for the first time, you're going to feel at home, because we care about who you really are. That's all we're interested in, is who are you really, and how do we help you become that? That's what I'm feeling is the transition narrative that I can feel emerging, and that I want, or it's my place, both. I want, and it's my place to help build. And we're building it here in a small way.
It's pretty much the essence of what I want SOAM Unlimited to be, is that like, I've had ideas of a social network that is basically only for folks like you're talking. So it creates that resonance in an area. And we could start it tomorrow with a Facebook group and get people in it. But I mean, you got to unplug from these motherfuckers. You got to create your own bubble.
Yeah.
You motherfuckers being Facebook.
Yeah, you need to create. Yeah, or we just sort of outgrow it. And the cool thing about this energy is that it'll just start going, like it'll guide us. I'm, for instance, really interested in creating a platform that people can come be welcomed into these new kinds of communities, whether it's physical spaces or digital spaces. So for make this concrete, we've got all these stores, still crap we don't need ad infinitum, that are getting wiped out by Amazon so that they can ship that crap to you cheaper. And instead of that model for business, what if we took some of these empty stores, many, what if we took thousands of them, and we made them outposts for healing and transformation, so that instead of buying clothes on the delusional belief that somehow you'll feel much more beautiful in a week when you've worn it, you walk into a place and we actually make you feel seen and connected to. And instead of charging you tons of money, we charge you nothing. It's just a gift. Here we are. That's a world I want to see.
Sounds like Burning Man.
Yeah, it's a lot like Burning Man.
It's beautiful. I love it.
Yeah, we just need, you know, a couple billion dollars to show up, and all of this can happen.
And then those people will then operate from their function, and nature will work for them, and they'll create cool systems to help people in other countries that need help.
Yeah, it's just like what are you here to do? What's happening through you? Yes, well, let's empower you to do that. We have all the money to help you do that, because that's the job of this money, is to empower you to be who you are. Oh, okay, you are not in your center. That's wonderful. Here's all this healing available to you. Mm. It's just literally making this healing the world concrete. It's happening already. I'm just playing with my my entrepreneurial excitement around the idea.
I love it. I love it. You give me so much hope. It just excites me. It literally, hearing you talk makes me so excited about tomorrow and the next day and the year ahead.
That's wonderful.
And where we're going as a people. It's filled with it, and I think it's because it's underlying or in the foundation of it is what that thing you said at the start, which is you're transcending the current state, collective state of consciousness, the dissonance. And it's more than a choosing not to engage. It's actually transcending it and having connectedness to your own soul or your own main vein into the universal supreme intelligence of existence. And when you've got that internal plug-in, when you're plugged in, fuck, it's so thrilling to think what would be possible. Like if we all operate from a baseline foundation of that level of love and intelligence.
Overnight. And the cool thing is when enough of us start operating that way together, we can hold each other when we're off center. No one's going to be, or maybe some people will, but I have my blind spots. I've got plenty of blind spots. I have places where I believe I'm whole and centered, where I'm not. And if I'm among enough people where there's goodwill among us to be in our truth, then somebody will say, hey, Brother David, when you talked about that, you made me feel this way. And that to me is a sign that you're not in your truth and you think you are. And if I know this person is in their truth, then I have an opportunity to step back and grow. Those are the kinds of communities that will...
I love that. They're my best friends in my life, the ones that give me the fucking truth. I love it. Oh. I'm thirsty for it. Because you know that it's actually for your best interest. It's like when you do it, I imagine if I was a parent and if I wanted to love my child, it would be through actions like that of absolute embrace, acceptance, and challenging them like that. I love that sense of community that we could have. Hey?
And it's not blame. It's just your intention is this, your state is that. We're just pointing that out to you with love, and we want nothing more than to bring you back to your center. Here we are. That's it. And then the ego will, mine will. So if mine will, other people's will, because I've worked on myself more than most, the ego will stand up and say, but I'm not. But if enough of us are holding each other in love, that greater force will say, you know what? Let me just surrender to this. And then before we know it, we'll be back on our feet.
So can I give you a specific example of a community environment that's very similar to what you said then, but create a lot of, you know, some dysfunction came of it. So the church that I grew up in was that. It was only a few hundred people living like that, where, you know, you feel like you hold each other accountable to your heart to stay true to laying your life down for God. So you've got this collective agreeance of what that is.
That and
what
sounds that looks like a police state so far.
Oh, it's a cult. It's a cult state. Yeah. And so... I mean, it's not operating off the intelligence of what I would deem God to be, but it's off one man's idea of what God is.
Yeah.
And then, but anyway, I would be interested to hear your reflection on this, because it felt like when I was in it, there was that really nourishing sense of community, and we got each other's backs, and I want to be vulnerable, and I want to be shown when I'm off track, and I want to show my fellow brothers and sisters when they're off track.
Mm-hmm.
But with that came a lot of challenging. So if someone's not on track or laying their life down for God, in quotations, because I say it in quotations, because it's by standard of a particular man's idea of what that is, then they get challenged or cut across. And, you know, like people, if you're sitting there and your son was next to you, 4-year-old son, one man would just be challenging in front of 40 people in a group, and you're getting essentially shamed and belittled.
That sounds like no fun.
And your children are there watching this and absorbing this kind of behavior. I mean, that's, for starts, it's a terrible impression for them to receive, for the person that they look up to. But secondly, it's terrible for the father to receive as well. And this has created such trauma in individuals that I've created a support group for this group of people that have left. And there's been about 110 people in that group that, because there's been a podcast about the same church on this person's podcast. But, and then that kind of stemmed all this support, a support group. But anyway, so it creates a lot of trauma and dissonance in an individual. And so to stay on track, that's, you know, that sense of community and holding each other accountable to what you deem is the best in the individual,
right,
can be fucked up.
Horrifying.
Yeah, horrifying or corrupted.
Yeah, I think the major difference between the world you described and the world I'm describing is on track in my world is in your own truth. Are you in your own truth? Are you in resonance with yourself? Are you in alignment? And not are you in alignment with an abstract other thing that we are holding you accountable to that we see better than you. So the risk, of course, is that in my world, you'd have people who tell you whether or not you're in alignment, who are not in alignment themselves, and thus will throw you off your center in a damaging way. The hope is that, or no, the belief is that if there are enough people who are in their center, then they will be able to point out when you are not in yours. where you feel held in that and can check it. And like the only countervailing force would be the ego. Be like, oh, I am in my center, but I don't know. I'm mumbling a little bit.
No, I get it. Yeah. And so I feel like you'd need values set. Like for one value would be no man before your own yourself, essentially. Like in the sense that, you know, like you're accountable to the truth within.
Yeah, you're accountable to the... You're not even accountable. It's like... You don't even need in this little utopia, this thing is emergent, happening all on its own, and it's just you want to be in alignment.
Yeah.
So other people want you to be in alignment. There are enough of us. I'm not saying we create a cult and institute rules that make this the case so that we can be at a certain higher level.
Gotcha.
I'm saying it emerges like thinking of an example.
A volcano?
Yeah. No, I was like there was I don't know, I'm trying to think of examples of when I'm off center, which happens often enough, but you know, I mean never, everyone knows the difference in their bones between somebody saying, hey mate, you don't sound right, this isn't what you're saying, you don't sound like you're yourself right now, why don't you take a beat and come back to this later, versus like, I know what's best for you. You suck. You're off. You're not in alignment.
I like it.
You know, that's the difference we're talking about. And no policing is necessary because we're just all working toward the same thing organically.
Yeah.
No force. It's a forceless world. It's anarchal. It's a kind of anarchy, but it's the anarchy of nature. It's the same anarchy that has trees grow and bees pollinate flowers. It's just the emergent truth of nature working through us.
It's amazing. It's the utopia is a vision of just powerful, enlightened individuals. Mm-hmm. Like you see in kind of like, you know, Black Panther, or, you know, this when the elders look like they've got the brightest eyes and are just all knowing. That's the kind of gang we're talking. That's the gang we're talking.
That sounds great.
Well,
it's coming.
It's coming.
It's coming.
We should wrap because we want to keep it punchy.
And it's late.
And it's late and you're tired. And thank you for your time. Thank you for your sharing and expressing all this fucking shit, that beautiful, beautiful shit that's coming for you.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for putting on this event. Thank you for having me on your podcast twice. This is great. I'm a repeat.
But way, way better this time.
Oh, awesome.
And next time will be even better.
Next time we'll put the two together, supernatural powers and utopia. Supernatural utopia. The Harry Potter world.